You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you really want inside. with your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, y'all. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life Here's a saying: conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things that you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and more importantly, will do. Hoping to, the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it was not, and it had to get done, it must get done, you got it done. Because you have the will to get it done. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, brothers and sisters, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And we don't have much programming that we had in the past, but hey, we're still on. I'm still here. Monday and Wednesday, from 7 to 9 p.m., Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson, brother out of New Orleans. Our Story, Monday, Wednesday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Baba Wes Johnson. Friday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 o'clock on Friday, Time for an Awakening. Sunday, from 5 to 6 p.m., Sunday at 5 to Pinckney to Pinckney, activist and Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan. His program is Sunday from 5 to 6. And then Sunday at 7, once again, family, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, too, if you want to get the programs that we have, just and also too, you can listen to this program. Either call in the call-in number, the 215-490-9832, to call in to listen or to give questions, comments, or concerns. Or you can just go to timeforanawakening.com. As you, I don't know if you noticed or not, but I haven't mentioned TuneIn in a long, long time. Don't mention TuneIn. But timeforanawakening.com, right there on the right side of the page, is the program. And from Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 11 a.m., it's there. It's live. Click on that, and you can listen to the program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. on Time for an Awakening. Like I said, you hit babaoshi.net, and you can listen to all the programs we have in our archives. Oh, yeah. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. WeBuyBlack.com comes into full vogue at this time because it is the holiday time. Kwanzaa's coming up, the season of gift-getting and gift-giving and so forth and so on. Well, brothers and sisters, not all your money should be spent with the Europeans. Please, be wise.
Seek out American African stores and vendors. Go to the New Black Wall Street or just go online to WeBuyBlack.com. Give gifts that will last and memorable forever. WeBuyBlack.com. Habashah. HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah. Oh, let me go back to Africa for the Africans. I apologize. Africa for the African, Brother Bomani Tayemba. He just got back from Kemet. His next trip is, he got back from Kemet. It was November 20th to December 2nd, you know. And now his next trip is January 30th to February 10th, 2025, to Azania. South Africa, to Azania. The next trip after that is April 4th to April 14th, 2025. Kenya. Then May 24th to June 5th, 2025. Ghana. November 20th to December 1st, 2025. Tanzania. Brothers and sisters, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. And what's interesting about that is that he has them up already. He has them up. He has the pictures up from this last trip. You know, yeah, he's on it, man. The brother's a good brother. Brother Bomani Tayemba. Yes, sir. But you can give Brother Bomani a call. Yes, you can. 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans.org. Excuse me, family. Habashah. Okay. Helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habashahincorporated.org. And they, of course, have done great work here in our community and on the continent with the Kashi Project on the continent in Ghana, you know, and various programs. So go online to Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. Ledge, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. Brother Peter Brown and Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. They're very serious about the four areas of human existence, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. They do 12 projects in 6 different countries with over 172 employed and over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, become a member of the Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. The wellness minister is still in Kenya. Right on. You know, when he comes back, who knows? I know I talked to Brother Ayo Kamathi. Brother Ayo will be my guest on Wednesday, because this Saturday here in the Atlanta area, if you're in Atlanta, he's going to do a program here in Atlanta this Saturday. So I'm hoping that you, if you're in the Atlanta area, find the time to check out the program. Yeah. I'm going to send this out to a whole bunch of people so everybody can have this this piece. And, yeah.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Okay. All right. My good brother's here. Yep. The Minister of Wellness, Brother Nathaniel Jordan, and he's going to be hopefully returning soon. And when he does, we'll be talking with him. But go to his website, theministerofwellness.com. Theministerofwellness.com. He has products. He has information. Okay, all of that for you and your health. Smile Pharmacy, SmiFarmacy. Smile Pharmacy. Brother Jabril, you give Brother Jabril a call. His website is outstanding. He has a lot more to offer, you know. And give him a call at 770 765-7751. That's 770-765-7751. That's Smiley Pharmacy, SmaiFarmacy. And give them, you can drop a line on Gmail with SmaiFarmacy@gmail.com. The Moses West Foundation. The Moses West Foundation. Clean water access saves lives. There's no doubt about it. And he's been doing it. And so when you go to his page, the MosesWestFoundation.org, you can choose an amount that you can give. Hopefully you can give on an ongoing basis, a one-time shot, whatever it is that you can do. Access to water is fundamental to life and prosperity, serving as a cornerstone for public health, economic development, and sustainability of our global ecosystems. UNICEF said that. They said how important it is. On Giving Tuesday, he launched a partnership with Dollar Donation Club. The Giving Circle enables you to make a difference with as little as a dollar a month. You can do that, family. Then he talks about the number of places around the world where water is a problem. But water isn't a problem. It's only a problem because of the accessibility to water. Water's everywhere. Water is everywhere. But safe, clean drinking water, particularly when calamities happen, when there's fires, when there's earthquakes, when there's tornadoes, when there's hurricanes, when there's other natural disasters, train derailments, water can be an issue. But you know, I've said this before, and hopefully you heard it when I said it, but I asked Brother Moses West, is there an issue with water when that train derailed in Ohio a couple years ago and spewed all those toxins in the air? He said, no, we can still extract the HO2 molecule out of all that madness and separate it and have it go through the machine, through the filterization and cleansing process, and turn the spigot on, and bam, out comes clean drinking water, safe water. He's a 509A nonprofit organization focused on alleviating the global water crisis by bringing clean water access and water health and hygiene education programs to the world's most impoverished communities. Safe water access. Our programs are focused on schools, children in rural communities across the United States and abroad. Sanitation and hygiene. Join us, and together we can abolish global water poverty one community at a time. Exceeds EPA and World Health Organization quality. Helping, it exceeds the Environmental Protection Association's requirements and the World Health Organization's water quality. Helping impoverished communities gain access to clean water, safe drinking water, and hygiene education. Reduce carbon footprint. By generating large volumes of water from the air where it is needed, we can cut transportation emissions, advancing our mission for a greener planet. So you don't have to transport the water in a big tanker or across with railways or highway. You can just put the machine down, let it do its thing, and bam, right there, right then, right now, water. It's deep in it. It is. The Moses West Foundation, brother, please, you know, they're currently working in 9 missions in 4 countries. They've provided and produced for charity 6 million gallons of water. The Moses West Foundation. And if you want to give out our good Ashe, Ashe it is. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located here in the West End, right here on Abernathy, Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard here in Atlanta. And they have delicious smoked fruities and dry goods, beans, rice, and so forth, lentils and everything like that. They have all kinds of good stuff at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located on the West End. Phone number 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. I was there last week listening to Professor Griff do his thing. Professor Griff used to be with Public Enemy, good brother. He's right here in Atlanta, still going to try my best to get him on the program. And but the Medu Bookstore just done great things. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, all kind of stuff. So if you're looking for gifts, a book, give a child a book instead of a toy or some other thing. Give a child a book. Maybe that might be the first book that they get. And they may be 7, 8 years old. Who knows? Give them a book. But they also have all kinds of other stuff there at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. This Saturday at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, Brother Ayu Kamathi will be presenting. If you get there at 3 or 4, it'll be good. The program will end around 6, 7. So it's going to have a good time. We've got a lot of good information at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar located on Main Street in Lithonia. You jump on I-20, head east. If you're in Atlanta, head east. Get off on exit 74. Exit 74, make a left. Now you're headed north, and about a mile on the left will be the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar. Or give Brother Gazimde Ajamu a call at 770-305-6373. 770-305-6373. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar. Yep. Jump in your ride. Go back in the opposite direction. You were headed north. Now head south and make a left. You're once again going east on I-20. Get off the next exit, exit 75, Turner Hill Road. Make a right, 3 lights, make another right, and you will be at the new Black Wall Street Market. It's on the left. The new Black Wall Street Market. Yeah, all right. Us lifting us there. The Economic Development Cooperative of our people, us lifting us with our good brothers. They have a Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com. Us lifting us. If you want to call to give questions, comments, or concerns, call. You can dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. The Economic Development Cooperative for our people. In the spirit of Ujamaa, one of the Kwanzaa principles. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop located in Macon, Georgia. Brother Abijah's got it going on. He's not open on Mondays, but he's open from Tuesday through Sunday at 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Give Brother Abijah a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon, Georgia. All right, family. Sun Goddess Sensor, one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Contact Sister Shelly Amonset. Shelly Amonset at 404-434-7963. 404-434-7963. Brothers and sisters, go online to Sanjay-Haiti. This sister is doing great work with our children in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, near the border with Dominican Republic. Sanjay, Sonje-Haiti, AYITI.org, Sanjay-Haiti.org. All right. The Enyasasim, Baba Baruti and Mama Yah. The Enyasasim, Daily Revolutionary Thought. December 8th. The alternatives for American African artists have been quite clear. Either they must work to realize and promote the inherent qualities that make American African art a valuable, functional force in society, or they must become absorbed in the dominant culture of the United States and lose the indigenous values of a vital American-African cultural heritage. Samela Lewis. Praise to those artists who have sacrificed the gilded sheltered benefits of Euro-Negro validated glory to openly embrace and uncompromisingly express their love and sovereignty vision for African people. Their genius is self-evident, and their choices reflect the highest of righteous spiritual choices. They have turned their gifts into weapons of the finest expressive caliber, giving us an intellectual and emotional artillery unparalleled as mirrors to an undefeatable souls. As the creative barriers of our wrath, the imagery they offer us is a motivation for the gods. Creatively, they are the visual extensions of the depth and breadth of our joy and pain as warriors. They offer up a frontline vision and artistic prayer for all those of us who do this work to see and feel. As well, they reverently do this for our warriors' ancestors, those transitioned and yet to come, to see and know that we continue their work and set the stage for its continuance. To them, we owe so much of our emotional sanity, for they are the one of our most vital, dynamic expression of self-love. Ashe. Affirm, I feel the righteously enraged message our centered artists bring. Affirm, I feel the righteously enraged message that our artists, our African-centered artists, bring. December 9th. Our culture is to be redeemed. It is a great and glorious work. And we are the instruments by which it must be done. But we must go from among our oppressors. It can never be done by staying among them. Let me read that again, family. Our culture is to be redeemed, and it is a great and glorious work, and we are the instruments by which it is to be done. But we must go from among our oppressors. It can never be done by staying among them. The Honorable Marcus R. Delaney, Marcus Robinson Delaney. If you don't know Martin R. Delaney, please look him up. You oftentimes see him in a Civil War or a Union uniform, because he was an officer in the Union Army, but he was a staunch Pan-Africanist. He believed. I know of one brother who was an authority on Delaney, good brother out of Dayton, Ohio. Yeah, man. We have been broken into adopting an individualistic analysis of events and conditions in the lives of African people. When examining African phenomenon progressively and from an African center, many of us misdiagnose the nature and the magnitude of our problems because of this narrow sight. Our enslavement is but one example of this limited analysis. For as atrocities and horrific as the crimes committed against individual enslaved Africans were, we do not give the tearing apart of us as a people the far greater emphasis it deserves. Too many of us see these individual acts as special, specific, and in singular. We tend to focus more on the pain of the whipping, the breaking, the drowning, the twisting, the starving, the experimenting, the murdering done to individuals than the more profound and far-reaching effects of ripping African people from community apart. Ripping African people and community apart. Still today, we become angry with the bad guy, the police officer who pulls the trigger, the politician who makes a racist statement, the banker who cheats us. We continue to attribute what is, which are but agents of a nation on a genocidal warpath against us. Our righteous rage is deflected away from its nationalist, culturally and socially institutionalized source and onto mere action figures, puppets, scapegoats, tentacles of a killing machine on a feeding frenzy for African minds, bodies, and souls. The whole is not without intent. Ashe. Affirm, I comprehend and concretely pursue nationalism. Affirm, I comprehend and concretely pursue African nationalism, sovereignty for African people. Ashe, brothers and sisters, the Inyasasim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah, reparations. That's what we're going to talk about today, brothers and sisters. Reparations. You know, reparations means repair. Now, you know, I've mentioned reparations. I did a program. I haven't done one in quite a while. And I've done programs on reparations and then tried to make it clear that, you know, reparations means repair. And we need to repair ourselves. I don't look at reparations as a check or something that you can get to get your ass out of some financial situation. Now, I understand, dear brothers and sisters, that there are many of our people who have been in an impoverished condition in this country for generations, a generation about 20 years. And you look at some of us have been in that situation for a very long time. Generations here in the cities, in the rural South, and so forth. Generations. And there are some of us who, after a time or two, gained some education, took advantage of some programs that the government had because of brothers and sisters who made sacrifices to help make programs available. You know, so I mean, those things happened. You know, there's no doubt about it, they happened. You know, but reality is that didn't help. That didn't help. I'm going to play this one piece by this sister on reparations. And, you know, it's important that we understand what it is and how it came about. It's a little historical piece on reparations, and I'll come back and talk about it because, you know, I believe in reparations, family, but not as what's happening with reparation as it relates to ADOS. I'll talk about they as in COBRA, the National Coalitions for Black Reparations in America, and others, because to me, reparations should be for us collectively as an African people coming out of the continent, suing the United States, suing anybody who has adversely affected us and took advantage of us, took advantage of our resources, took advantage of our human resources. That's how I look at it, as a strong people. Because it's clear to me reparations were given to the Japanese, given to some, even in some indigenous people and so forth, when they were advantaged. When they were advantaged. And it furthered their advancement, you know. So reparations is and I got a piece that I'm going to read to you of what it is and what it isn't. I'm not going to read all of it because it's a lot. But let's play this piece here, family, on reparations. The sister does a good job. Yeah, she does a good job with that. Here we go.
In 2014, writer Ta-Nehisi Coates' article for The Atlantic, The Case for Reparations, went viral. Tracing everything from the racial terror of slavery to the rampant housing discrimination of the 20th century, Coates made the case for financial reparations for the descendants of those who were enslaved in the U.S. However, the argument for reparations extends back much further than 2014 and also has significance beyond the Black American community. So today, we're talking about one of the most controversial topics moving through American politics for over 150 years, and we're going to explore a few key things. First, we'll look at examples of reparations that have been made to other communities across the globe. Next, we'll trace the history of the arguments for and against reparations to Black Americans. And finally, we'll discuss where the arguments around reparations stand in the U.S. today. Articles like COTUS often focus solely on the history and arguments for reparations for Black Americans who are the descendants of slaves because of historic harm inflicted on that community by the U.S. government. But there's actually a much larger conversation to be had. Before we dive into the then and now of reparations debates, we should first look at the global and historical precedents. So let's start with two examples from the U.S. Japanese American survivors of the internment/concentration camps of World War II and Native Americans. The Civil Liberties Act of 1988, spearheaded by people like Congressman Norman Mineta, who was himself a survivor of Japanese-American internment, was a watershed moment for this community. The bill, which was followed by a formal ceremony for survivors in 1990, issued checks for $20,000 and a letter of apology to over 80,000 people after 120,000 were forced into American camps during World War II. And you can learn more about the history of concentration camps in our video, Concentration Camps Are Older Than World War II, right here on our channel. There were also earlier reparations paid to Native American communities. The Indian Claims Commission was created by Congress in 1946 and lasted until 1978. The commission was led by commissioners appointed by the president, and tribes and nations were given five-year spans to file complaints. The commission could only make monetary awards, since the return of land was explicitly excluded. Over the course of its history, approximately $1.3 billion was awarded to 176 tribes and nations. According to Aaron Blakemore at History.com, this amounted to approximately $1,000 per person of Native ancestry, and much of the money was kept in trust or earmarked for reservation projects. But we should note that the commission has also been accused of chronic mismanagement. A separate agreement was made with Congress in 1971 when $962 million worth of Alaskan land, about 44 million acres, was awarded to Native groups in exchange for them giving up claims to land in the rest of the state. But again, the money was not given directly. Regional and village corporations were placed in charge of the land, and beneficiaries were given shares of stock in those corporations. Although these aren't the only examples of the U.S. paying reparations, they do establish a pattern. When historic harm has occurred, the U.S. government has been prepared to make amends, either through legislation or financial payments or both. Now let's look internationally. Two of the best-known cases of government reparations occurred in Germany after World War II and South Africa after the end of apartheid. First, Germany. In the wake of World War II and the systematic genocide of approximately 6 million Jewish people, the German government, as well as many German banks and financial institutions, paid billions of dollars to Israel and to individual survivors over the course of decades. The German reparations program was created in 1952, when the first chancellor of West Germany, Konrad Adenauer, signed the Luxembourg Agreement with Israel. And as of its 60th anniversary in 2012, the agreement had seen Germany pay out approximately $89 billion. The requirements and payouts have varied as the generations who lived during the war have aged and died. For example, in 2011, the requirement for receiving compensation as a survivor of a ghetto was reduced from 18 months spent living there to 12 months. And in 2012, the program was opened to survivors who lived under Soviet rule countries, making approximately 80,000 people eligible for payments of $3,250. Now let's turn our attention to reparations made in South Africa. In this case, the reparations came more in the form of truth-telling and public hearings rather than direct financial payments. In 1994, after Nelson Mandela was elected president after the country's first democratic and free elections, the country looked for ways to heal the harm caused by previous regimes. Under South Africa's apartheid government, there had been years of racialized violence against the Black population. Laws banning interracial marriage and requiring Black citizens to live in under-resourced communities and carry identification documents were just some of the violence committed under apartheid. But the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission, also known as the TRC, set up nationally televised hearings where Black South Africans were able to publicly name the indignities they had been forced to suffer over decades. Although many of the perpetrators showed little remorse, the TRC started in 1995 with testimony from 21,000 survivors, 2,000 public hearings, and 7,112 amnesty applications that shed light on the government's systematic abuses. The TRC shone a national and international spotlight on the human rights abuses of the apartheid era. However, the financial reparations promised to the TRC were extremely limited. In 2003, President Thabo Mbeki announced that one-time payments of around $4,000 each would be made to 18,000 survivors of apartheid who testified before the TRC, and the rest of the money would be placed into development programs for all South Africans. Through these examples, we can see that reparations can take many forms. It can be through direct payments, apologies made, community investments, or truth told. But what these disparate examples demonstrate is that reparations for past harm are a possibility and have been historically throughout the 20th century. So what about that old contentious argument about reparations for the U.S.'s involvement in slavery? It's an argument that stretches back to the end of the Civil War and continues to this day. If you've heard anything about the argument for reparations being made to Black Americans, then you've probably heard the phrase 40 acres and a mule. But where does this oft-quoted phrase and the idea behind it come from? Although it's come to stand for the promises made and broken to the 4 million enslaved immediately following the abolition of slavery and the end of the Civil War, this history is also a little more complicated than that. General William T. Sherman's Special Field Order No. 15 is the original source of this historical nugget, although the mule wasn't actually included in the text of the order. According to an article by historian Henry Louis Gates Jr., the order was an important post-war decision for a few key reasons. Issued on January 16, 1865, it came after Sherman, a Union general, and Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton met with 20 Black community leaders in Savannah, Georgia, 4 days earlier. The leader suggested that what newly minted Black citizens wanted most was land. One of the leaders, Reverend Garrison Frazier, is quoted as saying, "The way we can best take care of ourselves is to have land and turn it and till it by our own labor, and we can soon maintain ourselves and have something to spare. We want to be placed on land until we are able to buy it and make it our own." When asked, all but one member of the group of community leaders agreed that Black people should form self-run communities in order to avoid the prejudice of the South. In addition to listening to these suggestions, Stanton and Sherman had their own reasons for allocating land to newly freed Black people. First, they were looking for ways to weaken the morale and financial stronghold of Southern Confederate landowners. And second, they sought a solution for how to provide for the millions of newly emancipated Black people who had either followed the Union into battle or been set free by the Emancipation Proclamation. The actual text of Sherman's Field Order is broken into 7 parts with 3 key takeaways. Section 1 notes that these highlighted lands were to be set aside for newly freed Black people. Section 2 notes that the settlements would be governed and run by Black people, and Section 3 allocated plots of up to 40 acres out of the 400,000 acres seized and set them aside for this purpose. Sherman later ordered that the army could lend a mule to the new settlers, hence the second part of this famous phrase. Although Special Field Order 15 was quickly approved by President Lincoln, it was also short-lived. President Andrew Johnson, who followed Lincoln, was a sympathizer of the South and overturned the order the same year it was issued, returning the land to the plantation owners who had originally possessed it. But the phrase 40 acres and a mule would continue to be a rallying cry for the forgotten promises of the Reconstruction period, as well as a symbol of the hope of justice for descendants of the enslaved. Sherman's Special Field Order No. 15 wasn't the last time that reparations would be paid to members of the Black community. In fact, there are several instances of particular members of the Black community receiving reparations and amends from state governments and the federal government for individual instances of abuse. Take, for example, the survivors and descendants of the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, which took place from 1932 to 1972. During these years, researchers and doctors told poor Black men who signed up for the study that they were receiving treatment for syphilis when instead they were getting vitamins and placebos, leaving the disease to spread unchecked. Over time, the men got sicker and spread the disease to their partners and even their children at birth. You can learn more about the lasting impacts of this study in our video, Health Disparities in the Black Community, Past and Present. The Associated Press's Gene Heller broke the story in 1972, and after public backlash, the study shut down. In response to the revelations, the survivors received an out-of-court settlement of $10 million. The U.S. also promised health care and burial services to the men affected, and later provided health care and other services to their spouses and descendants. In 1997, President Clinton issued an apology for the government's role in the cruel experiment. The city of Chicago also paid reparations to victims of former police commander John Burge. For almost 20 years, from the 1970s to the 1990s, Burge led a crew of officers who tortured mostly black men into giving confessions for crimes they did not commit. Over 125 men were tortured by Burge and his affiliates, and in 2015, the city approved reparations for the survivors of these crimes. The $5.5 million settlement included money paid to the survivors and their families, waived tuition to city colleges, a mandatory Chicago Public Schools curriculum about Burge's crimes, and a public memorial, which as of the creation of this video is yet to be built. So where does that leave us in regards to the arguments for reparations for descendants of the enslaved? Many detractors of the argument point to the fact that no one alive today was personally or financially responsible for the crimes committed prior to emancipation. And yet, as is the case with reparations paid to Native Americans and descendants of the victims in some of the examples I shared, reparations for past harm can and have been paid after all of those involved in the original act have passed away. People who are in favor of reparations, such as Coates, argue that the historic disparities that have existed within the black community in the U.S., such as the wealth gap, housing disparities, and health disparities, are a direct result of the economic and social legacies of slavery. In her article, Reparations History and the Origins of Global Justice, Professor Katrina Forrester notes the long history throughout the 20th and 21st century of the fight for slavery reparations in the black community. And even within groups that advocated or continue to advocate for reparations, there's still tons of disagreement. Forrester writes, "American proponents of reparations for slavery disagree over what they would look like, pecuniary or non-pecuniary, one-off cash transfers to individuals as in South Africa, or compensation in the form of transfers or pensions like German reparations to Jewish victims of Nazism, public investment, group-specific banks, trusts, or funds, the return of land, job guarantees for black workers. There are disagreements over what reparations are for and how they should be calculated, whether they should compensate unpaid slave labor, unjust enrichment of slaveholders, wrongs suffered in the Jim Crow South, or wrongs suffered because of institutional racism in home buying, segregated education, and so on in the North." Forrester's argument brings up a great point. Although there has been persistent agitation for reparations for decades, people rarely agree on what the outcome would look like. But I would argue that's in large part because there have been many models of reparations made throughout the 20th century, rather than a lack of imagination about what can be done to repair historic harm caused by the government. So, where does that leave us now? Well, in 2019, the House of Representatives considered starting a commission on reparations for slavery, and in that same year, they held a hearing in which experts, including journalists like Coates, were asked to testify. And although no reparations for slavery have been made since, there's still ongoing activism and interest in seeing the conversation moved forward. But regardless of where you fall in this particular instance of reparations, the fact remains that there are historical and legal precedents for this type of action being paid to certain communities over time. Perhaps in the future we'll see the U.S. tackle its own history with slavery through financial payments, greater educational understandings of the legacies of slavery, or some other method. But until some resolution can be reached, the debate rages on.
Continue to rage on. Here's a piece from Brother Paul on a British perspective. Of course, once again, I look at reparations globally. I don't look at reparations from the United States, Europe, wherever. I look at reparations globally. I look at reparations for what the Arabs need to pay for. I look at reparations for what the Indians need to pay for. I look at reparations for what the the Europeans as well as Caucasians here in this country and so forth. Because reparations is to repair us from a time that we have been so deeply denigrated and demeaned and just, you know, I mean, not only is our labor, but our land. It's a total rape. You know, I know they, got reparations. in Chicago, Evanston, Illinois. Because the brothers and sisters in Evanston, Illinois were deeply redlined and their property deeply devalued. And so they proved that. And to me, when a group has proven the wrong that they have inflicted upon, that has been inflicted upon them, and they seek reparation or they seek some kind of repair, and that is given, that's cool. But I'm talking about an overall condition that has lasted hundreds of years, that have retarded our development and growth as a people. And I'm looking at Africa as well. But here's a British piece.
Look at it this way. Britain was made rich from Jamaica and other places. Britain did incredibly well out of the slave trade. And at the end of slavery in the 1830s, Wilberforce put the bill through Parliament, which ended slavery. In reality, it was the uprising in Morant Bay and other places that brought the end to slavery. But slavery did end, and the slave owners were paid compensation of £20 million at the time, which was 40% of UK, British or British government income at that time. Mm-hmm. And that debt was finally paid off to those people in 2015. Not one slave got one halfpenny at any time. Mm-hmm. The victims got nothing. Mm-hmm. The owners got everything. Now, there's been a demand for reparations for quite a long time, but I think it's become a much more valid and real subject at the moment. The UWI and ASIL did an analysis of what the costs of reparations would be, and the figure they came up with was that the UK would owe £18 trillion to 14 countries. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there would be negotiation debate around those figures. And then when it came up at the Commonwealth Heads of Government Conference in Samoa, our Foreign Secretary and our Prime Minister both said there was no appetite to have this discussion. 54 other heads of government mm-hmm. had said they wanted to have the discussion.
Yes.
But Britain somehow or other managed to veto even a debate. Well, it's not going to go away, because you look at the issues of inequality on trade, you look at the issues of indebtedness, and you look at the pain that so many, many families went through. Ones who lost people during slavery, but those since then. I think the issue has come full circle. Now, in Britain, the debate has actually become quite live.
Yes.
Some universities, Glasgow University, for example, mm-hmm. have paid. Mm-hmm. The Church of England has recognised mm-hmm. that it made lots of money out of compensation and it should pay. Other institutions have done the same. And the British Museum goes through convulsions the whole time about repatriation of artefacts.
Yes.
They have sent a lot of stuff back, of the Benin bronzes and others,
yes.
but other stuff they haven't sent back. So it's a real live debate. Why hide away from it? Let's have the debate.
I say, let's have the debate. But more importantly, let's have the resolution. Let's have the resolution. Let the European and other countries who have inflicted these harms upon us as African people begin to pay restitution for their crimes. They've always admitted that it was a crime against humanity. If it is a crime against humanity, there is no statute of limitations. So even though it happened hundreds of years ago, and the effect of it is, and the residual effect of it is still with us today. So it is ongoing. The Maafa just didn't happen, or the Infakani, the Mangamizi, didn't happen hundreds of years ago. No, it is ongoing. And I know, just like I played that African woman who doesn't want to be African, who is now the conservative representative in Parliament in the UK, who argues against reparations, Cammy Benenock. Remember that name, Cammy Benenock. You know. In fact, I tell you what, let's play her again right quick. So yes, so because this is why reparations is necessary, because they messed up our minds.
They messed up our minds, family. Yeah. Kemi Benenock. Yeah. Reparations. I know Brother Paul sent me that, and I'll come up with it very shortly, family. And Brother Paul sends me so much stuff, man. It's just great. I'm going to have a day when I just go through and pick out the best ones and have a day of stuff that Brother Paul sends, you know. Yeah. Yeah, here it is. Kemi Benenock's speech at the at a History Month debate here. She says, I want to speak about dangerous trend in race relationships that has come far too close to home and to my life, and it's the promotion of critical race theory, an ideology that sees my blackness as victimhood and their whiteness as oppression. I want to be absolutely clear. This government stands unequivocally against critical race theory. The same schools that have decided to openly support this anti-capitalist Black Lives Matter group, often fully aware that they have a statutory duty to be politically impartial. But now, where is she at in that debate? Okay, I'll see if I can find it. I'll have to come back from the break. So we're going to take a break. Going to take a break, brothers and sisters, listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah, change makes you want to hustle. The piece I wanted to play, and Brother Paul sent me a good piece just a moment ago, and of course we, applaud that brother. We're not going to play that particular piece because it's a little long, and but it's more thorough. This piece is newly elected Conservative Party leader in Britain, born to Ghanaian parents. This is an example of the enemies deep within our communities and with each of us that we must root out. Yes, she is.
This is the past. We need to talk about the future. There are many countries now who want to use guilt to try and exploit the UK. They ask for reparations. I saw it as a trade minister. It's not culture wars. I was at the WTO. I won't name the minister from another country. And he was telling me that we needed to give up some of the things that we were doing because of colonialism and because they needed time to develop. These arguments are a scam. Don't fall for it. We need to make sure that we put this country first. We work well with our neighbors. We work well with other countries. But we have to look after ourselves too.
Would say, shouldn't we just make up for some of the damage we did through the slavery? As a black woman saying that, they may find that hard to understand from you.
Well, there are many things that the British Empire got wrong, but there are many amazing things that the British Empire also did. And we need to be honest about that and stop pretending that it was all bad. The British Empire ended slavery, the Atlantic slave trade. We need to talk about that more.
My dear Africans, we are the cause of our own problems. We are the reason why the West will never respect us. We are the reason why they will continue to exploit us. Because our own people who are in the position to speak for us are speaking against us. Tell me how they are going to respect us. Tell me how we can restore our own dignity if we have people like this speaking in this manner. My grandmother used to say something that when you sell your brother or you sell your sister, even the buyer will not trust you. Now she believes she's British. She has nothing to do with Africa. And she has the right to say what she's saying. It's the past. Everything that happened was in the past. We should talk about the future just like that. Well, I don't know what to say, guys, but I leave it to you. Thank you all for watching.
Well, yeah, that's Cammy Benenach, the UK, speaking against reparations. No, there's many brothers and sisters who've spoken against reparations here in this country specifically, you know. And to some degree, I say I've not spoken against reparations. But I'm not about a check. You know, the columnist, editorial columnist, what is that Caucasian's name now? It's been a while. You know, he argued that we should give American Africans reparations. We gave them welfare. We gave them affirmative action. Give them reparations. Then I said, well, like what, you know, 20,000, and this is a long time ago, so these are small numbers, 40,000 a family, 20,000 an individual, okay, they give you reparations, they give you this money. Because of our inability to understand how important it is for us to be a collective people and to pull resources and do for ourselves, we're glad we got a check. So it becomes a stimulus check. You remember the stimulus check. Bush gave out one many years ago. You know, I think they had one. Because of the pandemic, they gave out a check. I think I even got one. That's good. Yeah. To stimulate the economy. Mm-hmm. And that's how the reparations would be, to stimulate the economy. You get the check, you go on a buying spree. You buy clothes, you buy cars, you may even purchase a home to get out of the ghetto, you know. But maybe you invest. Or maybe there's a group of y'all who say, hey, let's put this money together and buy some property. Let's put this money together and buy a business, develop a business. So there was some, you know, could be, but the bottom line is it ain't happening. It's not going to happen. These people are not just like the British. They're all the same people, family. They're all the same. They're Europeans. They're not going to deal with the issue of reparations. They're not going to deal with what happened to you. Now, European Jews, they've been given reparations. Indigenous people, the Japanese, who were interned, who were put in concentration prison camps in this country, they got reparations because they were American citizens. Well, you know, the government didn't do that to the Germans. A lot of Germans here, they didn't do that to the Germans. In fact, after the war, many German scientists and others came to this country, escaping. Now, of course, you know, they did find some German internment camp, prison camps, who had dogged out the European Jews, found them, put them on trial, and put them in prison, even if it meant, you know, 50 years later. You know, they did that. But more importantly, they received reparations. And what's interesting is that this government, which of course didn't do anything to the European Jews, as far as I understand, unless you can rescue me if I'm wrong, gave them money. They continue to give European Jews money. I think I'm going to try to look up and see what has been the total amount of money given to European Jews. Now, understand something. They gave that small group of European Jews more money than they ever gave to the whole of Africa by probably billions. Well, they were there. The United States was there along with Europe when it was deemed that they should have that land that the Palestinians have. The United States did that. Europe did that. You know. And they've been adversely affected. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about reparations. And I know there are some of us feel that it happened. Let's move on. Let us now, you know, go to school and do the best we can and get a job and, you know, work wherever we can work at. Hopefully it's a livable wage. Hopefully we can raise a family. Hopefully where we live at is the neighborhood is good. There are businesses nearby where we can spend our money. You know, the training that we've had as a people, making us think that closing ranks, pulling resources, is something evil, something bad, something we shouldn't do. We should be happy to be here. We should be happy to be in America, where there are many people who wish they could be here. Many Africans, ridiculous, love to be here. You know? And many Africans who have come here wish they could go back, because it's not all what it seems. The American dream for people of African descent specifically is a nightmare. Unless, of course, you have a skill, an ability for whatever, then hey, yeah. But if you're marginal, that ain't happening. You know, that's not happening. Good afternoon, Brother Paul. How are you doing, my brother?
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening.
All right.
Father Ochi, I am alive and kicking and giving thanks for life always.
Always. Well, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate that piece that you sent over on the Cammy's address to the British Parliament. Nobody was there, but I guess when he said she's going to give an address, let's all leave because there's nobody there.
You know, that's a very good observation you made there. Absolutely on point. You know, Baba Ochi, and firstly, let me just absolutely commend you for the marvelous work and the dedication you're showing to the cause. It's absolutely outstanding. Let me just firstly make that clear. You know, some of our problems, and I think personally, one of our major problems is one of communication. We really do lack communication, whether it's in the home, whether it's from within the family, whether it's within the community, whether it's nationally or internationally. We have a real lack of communication going on.
I agree.
And I really mean that.
No,
it's
I
just
agree.
Something I've observed, man. And I'm telling you, sometimes for me, it's absolutely mind-blowing. You know, simple. And I'm, you know, you got to start by observing your own family. You look, I just have to be honest with you. And sometimes simple messages can't get translated and you just wonder what is going on. Now, this is my conclusion. This is my conclusion, not to offend anybody. I think there's a real lack of intelligence going on. And I wonder, you're laughing, Baba Ochi,
I know, but I'm very serious. I know you are, because
you
mentioned that.
I am very serious.
You're talking about that.
Because I've been looking at this a long time, man, and there is a lack of intelligence. And I wonder, and it's, you know, we think intelligence is regurgitating information, which you go through the schooling, fooling system, and they plummet you with information. And we've been indoctrinated to think that intelligence is regurgitating that information. You know what I mean? So you go and sit an exam, which is based on your memory, what you can remember.
Right.
Right. They've just piled you with a whole lot of Eurocentric claptrap. Yeah. And then they judge you on what you can remember. If you really examine what they've done to us, you have to really think, my God, how have we fallen for it? They have actually dumbed us down. That's where we're at. It doesn't matter if you got a master's degree. Some of these people with master's degree, if you have a conversation with them, you think, what the hell are you talking to?
Mm-hmm.
They lack. Some of them people are the most indoctrinated because they have been plummeting themselves for 6 years, 10 years with Eurocentric claptrap.
Right.
And that's all they regurgitate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you ask them to speak outside of their compartmentalized mindset, they can't.
They can't.
I'm telling you,
they can't.
Sometimes
do it.
I wonder. They can't do it.
Mm-mm.
But they can regurgitate claptrap the European is impressed on their mind all over again to make them sound and highfalutin English words they use to make themselves appear like they're intelligent, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the dum-dum zone. And that's where we're at. So here we have it. Kemi Badenoch. Very educated woman, you know, extremely educated. Born in the UK, sent back to Nigeria by her Nigerian parents to educate her or indoctrinate her, right?
Okay.
Take away her African mind and then bring her back to the UK. And she goes in such a position and says that claptrap talking about, reparations is a scam. I mean, this is an African. Look, Baba Ochi, I'm just going to say one thing. I'm not going to carry on too long. This is what I'm saying. She is our own worst enemy. Not the white man, not me, not you, she. Now, one might say, you know, I've heard these arguments saying, oh, well, she doesn't know what she's doing. It's the white man. No, it's not. She knows exactly what she's doing. Let me tell you what she's doing. She's feathering her own nest. By the way, just like that Holocaust Harris you have over there, that woman. She's married to one of the same the genocide lot. She's married to one of the genocide lot as well. Okay, so there's a pattern going on. That genocide bunch who keep massacring people off the planet, enchaining people and hiding behind the scenes and pretending like it's not
right.
them.
Right.
Yeah? She's married to one of them as well.
Right.
Okay?
She's married to European.
There's a pattern going on here. Mm-hmm. There's a pattern you can see going on here. Yeah, they're playing us. They're using us. Now, I say it again, I'm going to reiterate it for the sake of clarity and good order. She knows exactly what she's doing. What she's doing, she's enhancing the energy to sell us down the pipeline mm-hmm. to hell in a handcart. That's what she's doing mm-hmm. for her own nest.
Yeah.
And there are lots of people like that who know exactly what they're doing. They are feathering their own nest for their own sake to sell those who look like them down the pipeline to hell in a handcart.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing. And we have to come up with a solution to deal with them.
Yeah, well,
because we can't stand this dumb, pretending and acting like it's not having a major effect on us. She's in a position of influence. She, you know, at that time, she wasn't in the Labour, she wasn't head of the Conservative Party. I think, if my memory serves me right, she was in education. She was the Minister for Education, the African Minister of Education, telling them that reparations is a scam. Do you know what? It breaks my heart when I even have to regurgitate that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
This is how they sell us down the pipeline. And there must be a remedy for dealing with these
traitors.
Total
right.
sellout people. There it's must
traitors.
Be. Because if unintelligent people don't have a remedy, and we've been placed in the dumb zone, that's why we don't have no solutions. Just talking crap all the time. No! It needs action and a solution.
Brother Paul, you with me? Or did I lose you? Brother Paul? I think I lost him. He'll call back. Brother Irv, how you doing, man? How was your weekend?
My weekend was fantastic, Baba Oshi. I'm doing great.
You sound great.
I think
you sound.
You know,
great,
every
brother.
Time, every time a brother Paul takes it to the next level,
yeah,
they already know he's saying some very powerful, making some very powerful statements.
Yep.
About our people, and some, you know, when I listen to Paul, some people may disagree with him, but what you can't do with Paul is ignore him.
No,
you can't act
no,
like you
cannot.
Don't hear something in what he says
right.
that resonates with the truth that's in you,
mm-hmm.
because the brother has a gift, and as do the majority of the people that call this show.
Yeah,
they have a gift, man. It's something in them that was touched by something that you said or something
sure.
that happened in their life, and it makes them say things that are so profound. And I don't think they even realize it. I'm not trying to analyze everybody. I ain't no damn psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know what I know, and I hear what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And from all the callers, I can take something that I can research, something that I can use, something that I can repeat. Once I research and to my satisfaction that what they're saying is the truth. And I'm telling you, Baba Oshi, the people that call this show and the people that I hear who are Pan-Africanists or maybe don't claim to be Pan-Africans, don't even know they are, but love Mother Africa. Love the fact that Africa is rising and love the fact that Africa's already risen. We are not – Africa is not an up-and-coming continent. Africa is here.
No, it's been there. It's been there a long time. And all the things that happened, it's been there. It's just the fact that it has been retarded because of colonialism, because of all
Come
the
on.
Interpolation. That's the deal. It's been there. And what's yeah. ironic, Brother Irv, is that, you know, it's been raped and pillaged and denigrated for so many centuries. And yet still, there's still more resources there on that continent than anywhere else on this planet. And so
wow.
to me, brothers and sisters need to wake the hell up at right now. You know, not tomorrow, but
uh-huh.
right now. And pull
uh-huh.
ranks, come together, and to control those resources. Do what Burkina Faso is doing. Do what Mali's doing. Do what these other countries are doing. Let them be the model. Let them show the way of us collectively working together and to rid ourselves of those other cultures who have come into Africa to exploit us. Get rid of the Arabs. Get rid of the Chinese. Get rid of the Koreans. Get rid of the Indians. Get rid of these Caucasians. Get rid of their ass and let us. And now we're in control. You want something from us? You will pay fair market value. No longer will you exploit us. No longer will you take advantage of us. No, and any African who shows signs of being a traitor will be dealt with severely. I mean severely.
Brother, so, Baba Oshi, I'm guilty, man. I hate to keep lighting that fuse of dynamite that you carry around with you, because that once I light it, you go off,
yeah,
brother.
Well, it's serious, man. I'm talking about things for us in our future, man. That is life and death. There's no doubt about it, man. Mm-hmm.
No, it's serious business, brother Bible. And I used to overthink. Overthink this whole Pan-African thing. I mean, I was like, I couldn't understand why people couldn't see it, why they didn't have the clarity that I had when it comes to Africa. I'm not a scholar, you know. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that cat that got all these degrees on the wall. But when you see something and you know what you know, can't nobody tell me no different. You can't. I was listening to the brother said he was having a Christmas party, and you know they got the Christmas tree, and I say, well, what? What exactly is the Christmas tree? What is that ritual? And he got, and there's no feeling because I called it a ritual. And don't be afraid of the word ritual, but also understand why you do what you do.
Right.
Why are you standing around a tree singing songs, drinking eggnog? Who taught you that? Who told you that that's what you do in December? After you go shopping.
Yeah,
but my point is, the point I'm making is, Baba Oshi, we've been indoctrinated and we have to understand that this didn't come from, white people didn't come in my house and tell me that Santa Claus was coming. My parents told me that.
Yeah.
The people who I love, the people who first knew.
But who told them? How did they get it? And who told them? And how did they get it? And who told them? And how did they get it? And on so and so on. The bottom line is that a culture that set that in motion was a culture that we were alien from, that only accepted something within us that they could control us with. That's it. We have a subculture because we were alienated from the dominant culture. And that subculture at times has been very negative. It's been negative in terms of how we treat each other. It's been negative in terms of the death rate that we exact upon ourselves. It's been negative in terms upon how we live, what we eat, the education or the lack thereof. I'm telling you. See, I'm going to tell you, Brother Irv, I put the blame where it always has been and where it always should be, squarely on Europeans, on Caucasians. Okay? How we behave, how we act, the things we think, the things we do, what we say and so forth has been designed for us to behave and act and speak this way. Okay? And so for those of us who listen to this program, such as yourself, Brother Paul, yes, we have been able to step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us and unlock the chains, or at least the chains, or release the vice grip that these crackers have on our minds for us to think in an African way. Because believe me, that lady I just showed you, her mind is messed up. Her mind, when you send them off to the school for the European to educate you, to train you, your mind will be messed up. Okay? When these brothers and sisters go into the military academies, when they go into the institutes of higher learning sometime, their minds are messed up. So even though they may have an advanced degree from one of these institutions, no, that is once again for service to the dominant culture. That and everything that you do is in service to that. You don't think independently. You don't think how it affects us, and you don't challenge it. You don't fight against it. You don't want to expose it, because you've been trained. You've been well trained, and you go along to get along, you know, and that's the problem. That is our problem, and it continues. You know, Kwanzaa is coming up very soon, and twice I gave a presentation on the day of Kwanzaa on Kujichagulia, which is self-determination, which is the second day of Kwanzaa. And first time
was back in Milwaukee. And of course, Kwanzaa was, you know, has been started in 66. It was a long time.
Okay.
But 50 something years, brother. Okay.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And I said then, we're no closer to self-determination today than we were when the framers of Kwanzaa, the brothers and sisters that brought Kwanzaa into the fore, are. It's just some words. We're no closer. And then I said it again about 5 or 6 years ago here in Atlanta at the Kwanzaa celebration at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The same thing, you know? Kwanzaa is not something that you observe during December 26th to January 1st. Kwanzaa should be instilled in your everyday life. That's what Kwanzaa is about, that you observe them in your everyday life. That the main thing of Kwanzaa, of course, is unity, umoja. So, and the reason why, because we need unity. We need functional unity. And if we had it, then we would control our educational system. Then you wouldn't have no Negro like that chick from UK, or you wouldn't have the Negroes that were on exhibit in the presidential election of Tim Scott and the other Negro. That it was just sickening. They were sickening. And they got nothing. I'm so glad. I'm glad Trump didn't give them shit. Okay. You know,
they got to humiliate themselves. They got to
that's what they did.
Self respect.
Yeah,
they got to show their people what not to do. Mm-hmm. They got to show their people that they made a choice, and the choice they made was wrong. But they weren't big enough to say, you know what, I made a mistake, and that to me is a big person who can say,
that's
you know what, I
made a mistake.
I did something wrong. Let's back up and make this right. No,
you're absolutely right,
Baba Oshi. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And Dr. Henry Clark, and I always say that, use Dr. Henry Clark and Dr. Ben and all the
those are our warrior scholars, man.
They've all said the same thing, mm-hmm, in a different way. If you keep sending your children to Arugu to educate them, you're going to keep getting what you get.
Yeah.
You keep... And you know, that's why the brother who has the school, the African Center school, I just raise him up in high esteem for doing that. That's not a do something on Monday and not do it on Tuesday. That's a life mission that this brother has taken on.
Yeah, him and his wife.
He has found his purpose in life.
Yeah, him and his
purpose
wife,
is to educate Africans in the way they should go in an African-centered mindset.
Right on.
Let me say it again, Baba Oshi, because an African-centered mindset is not something that you see on NBC, CBS, ABC. An African-centered mindset is not something that you're going to hear on your radio station. You know, the assimilationist radio station, the integrationist radio station, mm-hmm, and your fraternity and your sorority. Mm. You don't hear that. African-centered mindset. You hear get in where you fit in.
Yeah.
Go along to get along.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Teach.
Because
teach.
The path of least resistance is the easiest way to go.
Right.
If you know, we are all right. Then that's okay. We singing, we're dancing, and at the same time, the Rugu's building a railroad to suck all the resources out of your homeland, because you never hear an American African say, you know, I got a homeland. The Jew says it in a heartbeat. He got dual citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
The Asian says it. He has a homeland. But the American African believes that they have been something that is created by Arugu called a Negro. Mm. That is something that was created. That didn't come out the ground. That's not something that God created. That's something that Arugu wanted you to believe that you were. You are a Negro. No, you're an African. You can put a Negro in the oven, you're still going to make African biscuits, because we are African on the inside, Baba Oshi. Yeah. You know, we could talk about all types of current events and what Biden said and what happened in Syria and all that. But what we are concerned with right now is the progress and the victory for my people.
Ashe.
And I'm telling you, Baba Oshi, the fear. And I don't ask, why don't the white people like me? I ask, why do white people fear me?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they fear me? Why do I have to be a savage? Every time we get on the news, you know, them white people, them black people are so violent. I'm violent.
No, they're not. They are.
They are.
You talk to the come on, brother. You most of the guns in Haiti right now are coming from the United States.
Yeah.
How can they get guns but they can't get food? How can they get guns but they can't get transportation or electricity? How can you get guns but you can't get them to live amongst each other without fighting? And why are they fighting? Why have you come and destabilized their government? Huh? They didn't just jump up and start fighting each other. This has been a long-going thing in Haiti. This ain't just happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, and we know our history. And that's the one thing, Bob Oshie, I'm going to stop on this. The one thing that Urugu wants to be stopped is the learning of history, not his story, history. Because mm-hmm. he who writes the history writes himself at the top.
Sure.
But if, come on now, and that's why, and I say it every show, and I'm going to keep saying it, that's why our ancestors wrote in stone. Oh, you can't, ain't no whiteout in stone, Baba Oshie.
Right.
You can't erase stone with the eraser. You have to chisel the nose off of a sphinx. Mm. Amen?
Amen, I say.
Yep. That just means you agree to me.
Because there's a lot of nose and lip damages on statues.
You
got to
chisel that nose off. Oh,
yeah.
That,
a lot of nose. And in fact, you know,
and
when
that
I was
the first critical race theory.
Hey, when I was in Kemet and I asked that question to the tour guide, well, the tour guide at the museum, Kemetic Museum, is part of that school of the people who are taught by Azita Wass. And Azita Wass, I hate his ass. He's the one who says, oh, well, they are not black. Oh, they're dark, but they're not black. You know, because he firmly wants to state and put a position for the people who invaded Kemet, the Arabs, during the advent of Islam. When Islam started to spread, they came in and spread across North Africa. So they want to claim that they are black. And he's talking about from the beginning. He's trying to put them, just like other Arabs who have lived there today, put themselves at the beginning of Kemet. And in no way in hell can they even possibly remotely do that. The DNA, that's why they don't want to deal with DNA. That's why they don't want to deal with DNA. That's why the European Jews don't want to deal with DNA, because it fronts them, it exposes them to the shame and the lie that they perpetrate. See?
That's right.
So, you know.
The DNA.
It's a fight.
DNA brings the truth.
Right. Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that Dr. Sheikh Anjajop did, man, is he developed the melanin dosage test that you can take some skin from the mummy and tell how much melanin they had in them. And, of course, he was denied access for many years, even denied mm-hmm. access, and then he passed on. But eventually that was done. And so you could now today, you know that all of the people in the dynastic periods were African. Not just the 25th dynasty. I'm talking about the whole thing up to the 30th dynasty. Because it is after the 30th dynasty that the Ptolemies come in. Now, these folks are the Greeks. And Cleopatra is one among them, you know, but once all those time that they were there, they were also mixing. So she probably could have been what many people were mad about, that she looked, because she looked black. She looked high yellow. She looked like a sister, you know, with some, you know, with melanated skin, not deeply melanated, you know. See? And so they were mad about that, you know. But this is not there. This Kemet is ours. It is not theirs. And
that's
the reason
right.
why we need to fight for it, because it is a period of time of African magnificence, African
that's
splendor,
right.
African
that's
genius. And so I look at it like we need to be captured. Not that we build pyramids. We build pyramids, did a damn good job, and motherfuckers still standing, okay? Don't even need to build no pyramids, you know? But we need to build a mind that helped to build that society
mm-hmm.
where a society was based upon not enslavement, not servitude, not dogging people out,
Not like what you see in these movies, because to the European, you got to have slaves. You gotta right. be the top, and you gotta be dictating and dogging other people. No, it was not that. It was not that, and it was proven it's not that. And if you got somebody who's saying it is that, they're a damn lie. You know. So, so you know, this is what we're talking about, and we're talking about reparations and how important reparations are. But I look at reparations a lot different. Then a lot of people look at reparations because, I mean, you have organizations like ADOS, Descendants, African Descendants of Slaves. I even hate the damn name. I hate to even say it because, number one, we were not slaves.
Correct.
We were not slaves. We were captives. And what they propose is that only American Africans get reparations. Anybody who has come here from the Caribbean, anybody who has come here from Africa, anybody who has come here who is of African descent, anywhere else and come here, it don't apply to you. It only applies to us. And once again, it's about a monetary gift, a monetary mm-hmm. supplement, you know. And mm-hmm. I maintain that ain't about nothing, because that will be gone in a day. You know, it'll be gone in an instant. You know, I'm looking at the root word of reparations is repair. I'm looking at our ability to be repaired as a people based on the fact that we come together as a people and then challenge in world courts and so forth the countries that have done what they've done to us. So, and that's damn near everybody. Everybody has abused and misused and taken advantage of African people. And because of the kind of people that we are, we should have kicked their ass, you know, because all these folks deserve a good ass kicking. Dr. John Henry Clark said that. They deserve a good ass. And they do, man, you know. But the reality is that that'll only happen when we come together, right. You know.
That's correct.
Only. There's no other way. And so if your theology, whatever that might be, Christianity, Seventh-day Adventist, any kind of Christian thing that you got going on, or any kind of Muslim thing that you got going on, or any kind of other thing that you got going on, if that prevents you from closing ranks with me, because I might be an atheist, or I might be an agnostic, or I'm just a brother, if that doesn't, then that's a problem. Anything that divides us, anything that prevents us from coming together, we got to put that on, hold that in abeyance. You know, kick that shit to the curb, really. And then come together, close ranks, pull our resources, and begin to do for ourselves. Develop schools, particularly in the weekend. At an early start, and I've said this many years ago, at an early start, yes, send your kids. Because like the European Jew, and I can, you know, I know this specifically because, you know, in Milwaukee, the European Jews live in these suburbs because my mother worked for them. My mother did day work for them. But my daughter, but my oldest daughter went to one of the schools when they had a program where your child who's in Milwaukee and they know that the educational system in Milwaukee ain't about nothing, they could go to these suburban schools. And the suburban schools were accepting them because why? They were getting what? Exactly, brother. Money. They were going to get some money, you know. And so my daughter went to this one school, Whitefish Bay, you know. And uniquely, they sometimes were, the school wasn't happening. It was a day because the Jews, it was Rosh Hashanah. It was Yom Kippur. It was Hanukkah, whatever. Because they told them, said, hey, my kids ain't going to be at the school. Because the other thing about them was that they had their synagogues, their centers and so forth that they taught. They didn't want the teacher to teach them about what it means to be a European Jew. They didn't need that. You make sure you teach us the science. You make sure that you teach us the math. You make sure you teach us the other subjects, the social studies. But we gonna handle the cultural information, the historical information about us ourselves. Okay? We're gonna handle that ourselves. And that's what we should have done. Because that's what's important to us.
We should handle that. Send your kid to get the math information. Send your child to get the English information. Send your child there to get the social, whatever. But other things that we handle ourselves to make sure that we know who we are and begin to develop a love of ourselves and, more importantly, a love for each other, that we are willing to work together, we're going to trust one another, believe in one another, pull our resources and so forth, give out assignments and make sure that they're done at a particular specific time, put some date and timelines on it, and come back and report why it's done and why it's not done and better get done the next time. Because this is serious. This is our survival. But we, unfortunately, have been trained to leave our very existence, Brother Irv, in the hands of our enemy.
Of the oppressor. And what you're talking about, Baba Oshie, is what you say every time you sign off. We are leaving our very existence into the hands of the oppressor.
Yes.
So that means we're leaving our minds.
Yes.
In the hands of the oppressor.
Yes.
We are letting the oppressor, that you can take your son or daughter can go to a basketball camp, a football camp, get strong, learn plays, play sports really well, go to a music school and learn how to cultivate their voice so they can sing, and they can learn to act. But when it comes to the mind, the most important thing that you have in your body, because it controls everything.
That's right.
You leave that to someone
outside
who
of you.
Who hates your very existence.
That's right. They hate your guts.
They want you to die. They're anti-black.
That's right.
They're anti-African. They want you off out the way or segregated, if that's the right word. They want
right. You know what? They want you to die. They want you to die from this planet. There is no more cotton to pick. There's no more sugar cane, no tobacco. They ain't none of that. They want your ass eliminated. They want your ass dead. They want you dead on the continent, and they're doing it by disease. They're doing it by other inoculations and vaccines. You know, when that asshole was on his I don't know if it was a TED Talk or not, Bill Gates, he said, we have created, you know, vaccines for population control. What? Vaccines are supposed to be for, you know, ridding of disease and so forth. He's talking about, I don't know if it was a slip. In fact, I think you might be able to still even get it on YouTube. The Bill Gates addressed to a group talking about vaccines are for population control, you know? And so whose population do they want to control? Those who have the most population, those that we as African people have the youngest population. Our future, if it could be assured, only through us having control of our population, of us having educated
That's
it,
right.
of us having nurtured it, us having given the correct the, you know, things to help it develop and grow, can be assured.
That's right.
But these folks, because they're popular, see, they've been experiencing negative Europeans, Caucasians, whether they're here or any damn place they are, even in Australia and New Zealand, they experience negative population growth because their population is older. The women can't have children, you know?
That's right.
See? So there is an innate fear. That's what Francis Cress Welsing was saying, of the genetic survival.
If you look at the number of infertilization, I think it's called infertilization clinics in the black community, where are they at? Where are all the clinics that get you to have a baby in the black? In the black community, we have Planned Parenthood where they do abortions.
Right.
So why is it that we're trying to kill babies in the black community, but in the white community, they're trying to have we done tried 8 times to have a baby.
Yeah.
and the black woman, you brush up against her, she had 3 children.
Yeah.
And I ain't mad at them.
No.
But the thing is, they teach us, a black man tells a black woman, you know, baby, the woman says, I'm pregnant. He goes, whose is it? a white man, the white lady, tell him he, come on now, tell her she pregnant. He goes, oh yeah, he's lighting cigars. Oh, he's calling his friends.
Yeah,
and I'm like, it's not because we hate children or we don't want to have children. Let's be perfectly clear. What we're thinking about is, how am I going to take care of this child?
Right.
I'm just barely taking care of myself. I've been taught to chase money and work for white people. I've not been taught to start a business and have my own little cleaners or start a transportation company. I haven't been taught that. I've been taught to work for somebody. And when you work for somebody, you're at their beckoning call when they need you. And that's how this, and that's where they want to keep American Africans. But when you're
Brother Irv, you there?
Condition.
Okay.
We've made it. The gold chain and the gold ring, and I got on my gator shoes, right? And I got on my European suit. I'm looking like GQ. You feel good, but the outside is beautiful, but the inside is empty. You don't know where you are, where you come from, or you don't know where you're going. You just barely can remember where you've been because of drugs and alcohol. So we as a people have to look inward, and we have to say these things. You know, don't get it twisted. I evolved into who I am. I didn't start out like this. I started out like everybody else.
Exactly.
Come on now.
Yeah, same here. I mean, just though that I had a understanding back in the 60s, okay? But I got lost in the 70s. You know, the weather report, it's high in the 70s.
High in the 70s. Oh, it was real high in the 70s.
But I got on the fire department, and the fire department gave me an opportunity to read. And so I began to read, and the fire department gave me an opportunity to be involved in community and organization. And that's what happened.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So that's what happened. But got some other callers. Let me take Mama Dubon too, Brother Irv. Okay.
Yes, good to hear from Mama Dubon.
Mama Dubantu, good afternoon. How you doing?
Greetings. I almost forgot to come in, and here it is, almost time to close.
I got you.
So I still need to get that information, but
Irritated Dini, I got it for you. I got it for you. Yeah, because I just talked to him. He's going to be on the program. He's going to – the Brother Ayu Kamathi is going to be on the program Wednesday, and we're going to talk about the things that are happening at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Coffee Bar this Saturday.
When?
This Saturday.
Oh, that's this Saturday.
That's this Saturday. Yeah.
And, what
time? We'll start about 3, 4 o'clock, end about 6 or so. Yeah. This Saturday. And he was telling me that, the piece that you want to do for Kwanzaa, that'll work too, but he needs the details. Okay.
Right. Because I need to know what he would charge.
Sure.
We have to raise money.
Yep.
I don't know. So, that's all needed.
Okay. Yeah, so definitely. So I'm going to talk about Kwanzaa again. I'm going to give Brother in New York a call, and you, and you know, you can come on. And I know I haven't talked to Sister Akina in a while. She used to talk about Mama Kana, the sister that helped spread Kwanzaa.
Yeah. That's why we both were friends with her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, it's important that our community know how Kwanzaa started, the importance of Kwanzaa. You know, because I believe in that. In fact, if we embrace Kwanzaa seriously and put those principles into our everyday lives, as they should be, we'd be a better people. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd be a much better people.
I don't know if you know, who is it? I think Lori on Sirius XM. I forget when the program, she always called each day a different principle of Nguza Sada.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at her school?
No, this is... Sirius XM.
Oh, right on. Okay, on the radio. Like
Greg Carr and Karen Hunter have a program.
Oh, yeah, Karen Hunter and Greg Carr.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so there's another sister on that station.
There's another sister that does, she talks about Kwanzaa. Each day she gives a different principle. So today is Kuchika Sakalia Day,
mm-hmm.
and it tells you what it means.
Sure.
So she keeps it.
So, I mean, she does that
day.
Ongoing, or she just does that through Kwanzaa? Because, I mean, I do that. I do the same thing. You know, I do the same thing. I'll start out and get as prepared in each day that I'm on the radio.
But she does it every day, 365 days a year.
That's what I'm talking about. Ashe.
Yeah.
365 days a year. Yes.
We'll keep everybody's mind on, you know, stay on Google Sabbath. But we got to do it.
We got to do it. It's those principles. To instill those principles into your everyday life.
Exactly.
That you constantly think and do things about, you know, independence and umoja, that you constantly do things about being self-determining. And to me, being self-determining, it ain't about name changes. I know you changed yours, I changed mine. We all went to Africa. You wear gay lays, I wear kufis. I know, okay? I know how we are, sister, okay, Mama Devonta? But it ain't about that. It is about our mind. And how do we treat each other? How do I treat another brother or sister? That's what it's about.
Right.
You know?
That's
and then, of course, there's the, you know, Ujima, collective work and responsibility. I'm going to help out. I'm going to lend a hand. I'm going to be supportive. You know? Then there's Ujamaa. I'm going to spend my money with this brother and sister. You know? And not just during the 7 days of Kwanzaa. Oh, no. I'm going to spend my money with this brother and sister every day that I can. And help them understand, too, that you need to build your business and you need to present your stuff so all other brothers and sisters can do the same. You know?
Exactly.
Then there's the creativity of us. And then, of course, there's a Nia, a purpose. Our purpose. And then the Kumba, our creativity. And, of course, the Imani, our faith. You know?
That's right.
Our faith in one another. Not just an entity that is higher than ourselves, but our faith in ourselves and one another, to trust one another, believe in one another, to make the Kwanzaa principles alive within our people.
The PFM is planning a town hall meeting sometime in January on where do we go from here in the Trump era.
Okay. Who now? When is this and who is this?
PAFM.
Okay.
The local Atlanta PAFM.
Okay.
They just came out of their annual convention that they have every year. It was all online.
Okay.
It was only for 2 days. Unfortunately, they didn't invite everybody. They just invited just the people involved because we got a new president. And he's got a new deal.
Okay.
Things are changing.
Yeah.
So we got
to talk about that. Are you going to... I got to talk to Baba Baruti because he has this thing at the same time that they're having ASCAC in Columbus, Georgia, you know, and they're going to honor Dr. John Henry Clark, of course, whose burial is there.
Yeah.
So, I got to do that to find out what can be done because, I want to attend his thing. I want to attend that. There's so much, you know. Yeah.
Mm.
So
ASCAT is going to have their annual and
they're regional. Yeah, it's going to be
in Asheville.
Yeah, it's going to be in Columbus, Georgia. Columbus, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah, the 23rd, 24th, 25th. Actually, I think it's the 24th, 25th, 26th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Okay, December.
Yep, but January of January.
Oh, January.
Yeah, January. Yep.
Well, that's a good to know that so we don't
have
our town hall weekend.
So.
Thank you. All right.
All right, Mama Bantu. I appreciate you. All right, sister. You have a blessed, wonderful day, and I'll see you soon. I know. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. Hopefully you can make it. This Saturday when we have Ayu Kamathi at the Black Dot. Okay? All right, my sister. Peace. All right, brothers and sisters, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you all. I really do for those who call in and those who listen. This is what I do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and you just the time for yourself. I talk about the issues that are affecting African people, and I do it from an African-centered perspective. A lot of times, this is not my opinion, because my opinion is profane. This is the perspective of African scholars and historians that I have been blessed to read and even have the opportunity to sit at the feet and listen
at conferences I've gone to and so forth. These are the men and women that I believe, that I trust, that have African people's best interests at heart. So we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure as hell, damn it, don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahadie. Abibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed day, my family, and I will see you soon. Peace.
Great show, Baba Oshie.
Thank you, dear brother. Appreciate you, man.
Great show. Yeah.